If you used a touchscreen today, it is based on the technology of inventor and entrepreneur Hal Philip. We continue our conversation with Hal Philip now on Mind Matters.
Welcome to Mind Matters, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
We've been talking to inventor and entrepreneur Hal Philip about his journey as an entrepreneur, an inventor first and then an entrepreneur, in the development and the marketing of technology, including probably the technology that you use today for if you used a touchscreen. So we're going to continue our conversation. There is a part one of this podcast. Before you listen to this podcast, I would encourage you to go back and listen to the first part of the podcast, part one, so it'll give you a foundation and bring you up to date on what we're talking about. Hal, we had talked about you last time moving from the United States to England and how you accidentally founded a company. I don't know if it was accidental, but it was unplanned when you moved over here.
Well, it certainly is more amusing to think of it as unplanned. Yeah. Accidental than yeah, okay.
Yeah, there was...
No, I didn't plan on it, and it kind of was accidental in the sense that it was not a deliberate choice. I never saw myself as being a CEO or as being a company founder. I was really a consultant. You know, that's what I did. And I preferred other people do the heavy lifting. I loved the consulting and contracting model, and especially the patent licensing model, for the simple reason that if you're doing patent licensing, you're not involved in the manufacturing. You don't have hundreds of employees or however many it takes. You don't have to do the marketing so much, or you might be involved in that if that's something you want to do. But you just get checks in the mail. You know, you just get amounts deposited in your account, which is really, really cool. And so I just wanted to continue that. That's really why I went to England. I was hoping this company would generate revenue for me. And then when the relationship fell apart, when it was clear they couldn't really produce the product very well, they certainly couldn't market it. They couldn't even answer the telephones after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, much to my shock and horror. I obviously didn't do my due diligence correctly, did I? So, you know, shame on me. But it put me in the position of having to rethink what I was doing and having to actually decide. Well, I did decide to manufacture the product myself. And as soon as you do that, you're talking about hiring people and doing all the things that you didn't want to do. You incorporate a company, you know, you start worrying about your expense levels and marketing and everything else in a different way. But I did that. I rented some space and I started hiring people.
One of the areas that you pioneered was charge transfer sensing. Could you explain that at a level which somebody who isn't a nerd can understand?
So when you comb your hair on a dry day, your hair kind of flies up, okay? If you walk across a carpet on a dry day and touch a doorknob, you get a spark. Your body has a charge at that point. Your hair has a charge when you comb your hair. And you can reduce this charge down to a single electron, or the absence of an electron is a unit of measure. So the unit of measure is an electron of charge. And so if you want to measure capacitance, you can do so. Capacitance, by the way, being the ability to hold charge. The way that I discovered to do this was to charge up the object in question to a certain voltage and then transfer that charge into a known capacitance. In other words, a known holding tank for this charge, and then measure the amount of voltage on that. I don't know if this is coming across right. It's very difficult to describe in layman terms, but it's like the touching of the doorknob. You're transferring the charge from your body to the doorknob. It's coming off of you and going to the doorknob.
In a half-inch spark.
In a very small spark.
Yes.
Correct. That's a switching action. It's like throwing a light switch. You're coming close enough that the energy will bridge across the air and go into the doorknob and drain the charge away from you into the door or the door frame or whatever it's going. And the charge transfer sensor is a way of measuring how much that charge has been accumulated in the door in this case. But in the case of an electronic circuit, it's done on a very small scale, of course, to fit inside of your phone or whatever. And it's done using semiconductor switches instead of using spark gaps in the case of you and the door.
Now, we do know that you use this in the touchscreen, but there were some other interesting applications that you used this technology for.
Were there?
Well, I thought they were.
Okay. Well, I did do the faucet. The faucet was the first application of this.
I thought the faucet was optical.
It was, but I did do the capacitive version of this.
You did do
and show it around
version.
And they all said, forget about it. We have to wait 20 years.
Okay.
So the first application was really for the automatic faucets. But I did liquid level sensing. In fact, I worked with Formula One teams in England, including McLaren.
What is a Formula One team?
Formula One racing. It's like NASCAR.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
European NASCAR.
Well, it's not NASCAR. They're custom-made cars.
Okay.
But if you go to McLaren, for example, you can get a Formula One car. They're special cars.
I see.
NASCAR are modified stock cars, right? So it's I guess a little bit different.
Okay.
But similar concept. Anyway, they had a lot of problems with sensing liquid levels, the engine oil and the water in the radiator and all this kind of stuff. And they're sloshing around at high speeds and so on. And so they needed an accurate way to measure these liquid levels. And they approached me and I designed sensors for them. So, I was like, for several years, I was the only source of liquid level sensors for certain Formula One cars, not all of them, but certain ones.
And how did they fit into the car? What was the purpose of them? Just to tell you how much gas was in the tank? Or?
Yeah, gas in the tank was one of them, but oil. Oil was a big one.
The oil level.
Oil
I
level,
see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to make sure you have enough oil in your engine, otherwise your engine kind of seizes up and dies, you know. It's kind of embarrassing on the track.
Seems to me this would be applicable to any car.
Yes, it was. In fact, I did projects with Ford, for example, later.
Really?
Yeah. I did a lot of projects with Ford together, and liquid level was among them.
I'm going to ask you again, and I suspect you'll give me the same answer, but do you know the degree to which your technology is still applied?
No idea.
No idea.
I know that it was used in keyless entry systems. The keyless entry systems are where you can just walk up to the car and it will unlock for you.
Yes.
Without touching anything.
Yes, yes.
You just go put your hand near the handle of the door and the car magically unlocks itself.
And you don't need to put a key in the ignition, you just push a button.
You don't need to push the fob button. You don't need to push the remote control either.
You just
bring your hand near the door handle or just inside the door handle. And it's enough to unlock the car. So that requires a capacitive sensor to sense your hand, and those were mine.
Those are yours?
Yeah. Oh, they were. Goodness. Whether they are today, I don't know.
Okay.
But they were definitely mine, almost all of them.
So you have a pattern going here. Once the patent expires, you lose interest in keeping track of what's going on.
Well, I lose interest. And I usually lost interest when the next big thing came along, and
I just lost
track of the first one, because the next big thing was always 10 times bigger than the previous thing.
I see.
So cars were kind of a bump in the road. Well, not a bump in the road. It was a pleasant thing in the road because it generated revenue. But I also did a lot of appliance stuff.
So
I did a lot of kitchen appliances,
to the car key. Is the capacitive sensor the way that the car knows that I'm there because the font is in the neighborhood?
Yes. And the specific problem with cars is that there is a way to read the key in your pocket through radio fields. But it takes a very strong energy field to read that out of your pocket.
Yes.
Okay. And the problem is that this consumes a lot of power, and eventually your car battery will go dead if you leave your car at the airport parking lot and disappear for a couple of weeks on vacation.
Oh, so you have
to come back, your battery's going to be dead.
Gotcha.
So you have to turn it on only when it's really needed. So it will then interrogate your key. And the way to do this is by using capacitance, sensing your hand near the door handle. And that capacitive field is very, very low energy. You can run the car for a year on that, more even. It'll die of just a natural death on the battery from disuse. So that capacitive field is used to sense your hand, which then triggers the radio frequency identification system to come on, generate a lot of power, but generate this nice field. Your key in your pocket will respond to that, and then the car will unlock.
So your foundational technology is used today in these font things.
As far as I know, that's still used in that area. But again, I haven't really tracked it. But I would say that's one area probably is used. And also in kitchen appliances, as I said before.
Kitchen appliances, what?
Yeah, touch controls. My first project in that area was with General Electric in Louisville, Kentucky. And they had the high-end Monogram family of kitchen appliances at the top end. And they were struggling with they were using capacitive sensing before, but it was a previous supplier that was using a much more primitive technology that didn't work well.
Mm-hmm.
It was much more expensive. And so they approached me in the early 2000s to do a project with them, and we became the preferred supplier for capacitive touch for GE.
Wow.
And then went on to Miele in Europe and Electrolux.
Miele, I'm not familiar with
Miele. Yeah, Miele is a big European brand.
Okay.
Yeah, very big German brand. and Bosch Siemens and so on. So yeah, we became very big in the appliance sector. Really now, big.
These were all licensing agreements,
nope,
right?
No, you no, actually we, manufacturing... we sent chips.
You did send chips.
We sent chips, yeah.
So you hired a lot of people in order to make these chips, I guess, right?
Or you, no, did you, the secret was, it? No, we outsourced it. We used standard microcontrollers. We didn't design our own chips at all. We designed the firmware that went inside the chips that turned them into sensors. And that was what was really unique about the technology. Nobody else could do that. Everybody else needed a custom chip. We didn't need a custom chip. So not only were we fabless, in other words, we didn't have to have our own factory for making these chips. We could have somebody else make them for us. But even beyond that, we didn't have to do anything special. We just needed to use a suitable off-the-shelf microcontroller, design the correct firmware to go inside, have the manufacturer of the chips put the firmware inside for us so we didn't even have to do that part. They would laser mark our company logo, the part number, everything on the top surface of the chip. So when somebody bought one of these chips from us, it looked just like a Quantum Research Group chip, but actually it was somebody else's chip that we were rebranding with our software inside.
Is that right?
That was our business model. We had tremendous growth and very high gross margin, and it was a beautiful business plan. We had very little inventory to deal with, so low cost, low overheads.
Sounds like the ideal business.
It was great.
Well, Hal, we're out of time again, so we're going to continue this in the third podcast. We haven't even gotten to the point of application of Hal Phillips' technology to touchscreen and how he was approached by Apple and how things got a little touchy with Apple. So we'll talk about that next time on Mind Matters. Until then, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.